It is Tuesday, December 28th. We are 3 days away from the college football playoff and 4 days away from the Buckeyes matchup in the Rose Bowl. We're going to break down the Rose Bowl first because of the news of the opt-outs for some of the Buckeyes. Chris Olave, Garrett Wilson, Haskell Garrett, and Nick Petitfrere have announced they are not playing in the bowl game. So I want to talk about kind of the culture of college football and what these bowl games, these quote-unquote insignificant bowl games, mean. And kind of, I just want to try to help reset your mindset as you view the impact and meaning of these bowl games, because I think that if we shift our mindset and what we expect and think about these bowl games, they can actually be pretty cool because they've definitely changed. I mean, 10 years ago, the Rose Bowl would have been a huge game for Ohio State in this situation, which now people are viewing it as not a big game. And I think that's a mistake because it is a big game for different reasons. But I want to talk about that. We're going to talk about this Utah team, what I see when I just study their film and who they are and what Ohio State needs to do, especially with the departure of two of their top three offensive weapons in Garrett Wilson and Chris Olave. And will C.J. Stroud kind of have an improvement, an uptick in performance after the Heisman snub, quote unquote? He was disrespected finishing fourth, apparently, and some of the criticism he's received and Desmond Howard calling him out. So excited to talk about this game. Been a long time coming. That game will be on Saturday, so set your alarms for the new year. 2022 is coming, and I'm excited for it, man. I think 2022 is going to be the biggest year for me personally in this platform. I mean, I know it is. It's unbelievable. We started out as a small platform. I'm not going to get into the finances of it, but we doubled in. So 2019, we did more than I ever thought a podcast could do. We doubled that in 2020, and we tripled 2020 and 2021. So if we could just keep with the growth, man, keep doubling in size or tripling, good God, if we triple in size again, this is going to become a monster in, you know, 3.5 years, which is crazy. So excited about some of the stuff coming on the horizon for us. We'll be announcing a lot of stuff in January. Obviously, the morning show has been a huge addition and asset. Having Chris Drew has been awesome. Feedback's been phenomenal. Our Menace to Picks handicapping service is absolutely destroying December, up over 600 units, which if you bet 10 bucks a unit, you're up over $6,000 in a month. And November sucked. I don't want to, you know, not have full transparency. October was unreal. Best month we've had. November was a bad month. December destroyed October as far as how big it was. So we're up a huge amount in football season, and that'll carry into the off season. So we're excited about it. If you're interested, Patreon.com/Menace to Picks or on Twitter and Instagram. You can follow us at Menace to Picks. We also added a war room, which has been one of the coolest things we've added. It's a little more pricey, but if you're a serious gambler, man, it is. Right now, there's about 20 people in there, all very, very serious gamblers. A lot of conversation 24 hours a day with our handicapping team. Just questions, what they like, what we like, going back and forth. And I know that everyone in that room has made more money since they joined it than they would by themselves. So it's pretty sweet. Check it out. I do have one of our sponsors, MyBookie. I got a parlay for you tomorrow because you might not get it in time. If you go to MyBookie, one of our partners, and use promo code Menace, you get a free deposit match up to $250. They'll match it so you can bet with free money. So go to MyBookie, sign up, and just get some free money. And I'm playing tomorrow. Two unpopular picks, coachless picks. I'm taking an Oklahoma money line. They open at -3.5. They're up to -7. So a little bit of juice there, but I'm parlaying the Oklahoma money line with the Clemson money line. And I know Buckeye fans probably be like, Clemson, are you serious? I think they overcome the chaos and play their best game. They're going to be missing Mike Elliott. They're going to be missing Brent Venables, but I like Clemson to pull this game out. I'm playing Oklahoma Clemson parlayed, hope about an even money parlay. So really fired up to watch them play tomorrow. We're getting into some better bowl games. It's kind of nice, isn't it? None of the riffraff that we're watching Houston and Auburn right now and all that. So go to MyBookie, place that parlay, come gamble with us. Use Menace to Picks if you need advice. Also, we have our big board. I was wrong. I thought we sold it out. We still have 4 left. So if you want to play for the big prize, you know, with $300 if you win the final score, $100, you know, you can check out the breakdowns on social media. But we have 4 spots left for the Rose Bowl Saturday, the two semi games on Friday, and then the national championship game. So your square will play in all 4 games, have a chance to win at least even money, and help us raise money for charity and our Zone 6 fund. Also, we're going to announce a big board for the national championship game, trying to decide on the amount each square costs. But obviously, the more it is, the bigger it is. Right now, if we charge $100 a square, the final score payout, you could win $3,000. So we're looking at $1,000 at halftime. I mean, looking at making a huge payout board. If you're interested or think that's something cool, shoot us your feedback, how much we should charge, if $100 works, and we will launch that board here probably later in the week. So just excited to raise money for good causes, man. So many good causes out here that we're donating to. Biggest one being our Zone 6 Fund for inner city Columbus athletes to get scholarshiped at Plus 2 University with Eric Lichter. Really cool to be a part of. So anyways, enough about that. Let's get to the show.
What a hit, Denzel Ward. You got barbecue back there and you didn't invite me. Hurt my feelings.
You'll be pleased to know this is the last time I'm hosting. I don't care anymore. I'm joking. I never did.
Braxton Miller's loose spin move. Miller heading for the end zone.
You're in no position to lecture the public about anything. You know nothing about the real world.
He'll run it after the 10, 15, 20, 25, 30, 35, 40, 45, 50, 45. There goes Davis.
Oh, my God.
Davis is going to run it all the way back. Auburn's going to win the football game.
Lucky for me, the press can barely speak English.
But they are who we thought they were.
Well, he has trouble with the snap. And the ball is free. It's picked up by Michigan State's Jalen Watts Jackson. And he scores on the last play of the game. Unbelievable.
Well, then get the fuck out of here then. Okay, see ya.
And down goes Auburn. The SEC falls to 0-4 in bowl games. And everything I've been saying all year long is ringing true. The SEC is a two-team conference. And those two teams are not as good as you think they are because the SEC is wildly overrated. I've been watching it all year, saying it all year. Everyone else in mainstream media has been lying to you or they don't have a clue what they're talking about. And yes, I said the SEC is 0-4 because Texas A&M forfeited their bowl game. Save the narrative about COVID. If they were in the playoffs, there is a 0.0% chance that they forfeit the playoff game. 0% chance. So the SEC is 0-4 in bowl games, and the Big Ten will become, by the end of the year, will reign as the best conference in college football because they were the best conference, top to bottom, in college football. Write it down, take it to the bank. The SEC is showing their ass right now in postseason play, and I've always said, for you to sit here and watch the games as a fan or just look at results and try to determine the best conference in college football, especially as they're cannibalizing each other, is asinine and dumb. It's just uneducated, right? It's unreal. It lacks all common sense. Because if you did that, it's all based on media perception, right? Who's to say how good the SEC is as they're beating up on each other? When Auburn plays Alabama ridiculously close and then looks like dog shit against Houston. But see, when I watch the film, you can see. If you study film and you know what you're talking about, you can see how good a team is at getting off blocks, how well they tackle. What's their quarterback's timing like, his pocket presence? How about pass pro? Do they make a bunch of mistakes? Can they pass off twists? Route concepts? Do receivers run good routes? That is opponent independent. And I've talked about that before. You can watch a game. Right? Ohio State plays someone shitty. You can watch that game, and if you have a trained eye, you can take something away from that game about that team. And that's what I've done all year. And honestly, I've been unfiltered and honest with you guys because I have seen things that are different from past years. This is not an SEC hate that's coming out. The SEC has been the best conference in football pretty much year in, year out for a while now. But the tides have turned slightly this year. And it might be a futile year. It might next year swing right back into SEC's the dominant conference. But this year, the Big Ten has ruled supreme. They are the king conference this year. And it's unfortunate that Ohio State is not up there also because of that loss to Oregon and because of the fashion they got their ass handed to them from Michigan. That's just the reality of it. But Cincinnati, you have to add them to the Midwest brand, right? Notre Dame, solid team. Michigan, really good team. Ohio State, solid team. Penn State, decent. Wisconsin, decent. Iowa, decent. Like, you can go down the list. There is some solid team. Michigan State, decent. And I want to talk about the current state of college football before we get started because I think it's important. One is these bowl games are where you evaluate teams. The problem being a lot of these bowl games, I get it. They don't mean as much, right? Like Auburn didn't have Bo Nix. He's in the transfer portal. Michigan State's going to play Pitt. And the two biggest names in the game are not playing in Kenny Pickett and Kenneth Walker III. So you look at some of these games, and they might not be the same version of those teams that would have taken the field in a playoff game if that's where they, you know, what they made it to. But it's all you can evaluate it on, right? Everyone is dealing with those circumstances, and some more than others. Utah is not dealing with it like Ohio State is, right? But I think the biggest problem I have right now nationally, in the national landscape of sport, really, but it's specific to the bowl games, is the COVID cancellations. Such a crime to the players. Such a crime to the fans. A criminal to the sponsors that paid millions of dollars to sponsor a game and promote kids getting a free trip in reward for all their hard work. Kids that pose zero risk of serious illness. There's no reason why a sport that is 98% vaccinated, if you believe this, and I'm not trying to go down a political path, but if you believe that the vaccine is doing what the data is saying it's doing, right, which is severely reducing the risk of serious illness, right? I believe that. That is what the data says it does. Then why can vaccinated people not play in this game? We're testing asymptomatic people, people that are not sick, that might have a strand of the virus. Who is in danger? Right? This age bracket already really contained minimal risk to begin with. And if the vaccine does what it says it does, why are we not playing? Why is a kid that's not sick not allowed to play? It just doesn't make sense. The vaccine doesn't stop transmission. We know that, right? It might even minimize it. I don't know. But if it does, then why are we testing for it? And why do we have the same thresholds? The NFL's already adopted the policy. Every other sport needs to, and I'll end it with this. I'm done talking COVID because this is not a COVID science show, but test people that are sick. If they have COVID, make them sit out the 5 days the CDC recommends. Simple as that. There's no reason to do this, and it's a shame that kids are going to bowl games and they're all of a sudden the other team has COVID and they can't play, and these kids are stuck in a remote location with no game to play. They're trying to scramble to find teams. It's absurd. It's not fair to the players, not fair to the fans, especially the ones that travel to those distances. It's not fair to the sponsors, like Barstool sponsors a bowl game, millions of dollars spent, boom, game canceled. Like, how's that fair? Unless it was for real risk. So I'm going to get off that. I do want to talk about the opt-outs. Obviously, Ohio State, big news. Garrett Wilson, Chris Olave, Haskell Garrett, and Nick Petitfriere all opted out. I think I called all of those. I thought Cameron Brown might, but he's going to return for his senior year, which I think is smart for his stock. So he will play. But these four, I have said since the Michigan game that they would probably sit out. Nick Petitfriere is the one that I thought might want to come have that game on film after he played so poorly against Michigan. But he decided that he's just going to forego it, train for the draft, and get ready for the NFL. They projected an early second round pick, so it's hard to knock the kid. Don't, you know, to avoid injury. But I want you to think about this now. I want you to reframe how we view the non-college football playoff bowl games. Because right now in your mind, you are living in 2003 when the Rose Bowl was a huge game, right? Back then there was just a BCS title. And if you didn't make the BCS title, only two teams made it. So teams, players, coaches, the landscape valued those New Year's Six bowls at a very high standard, right? That's what they were. They were a huge reward and a way to kind of leave college football, leave the season, end the season on a high note, leave college football and go to the NFL as a Rose Bowl champ. That mattered back then. That's not what they are anymore. Both because of standards and how the media has made a spectacle of the playoff committee, the college football playoff, four teams in, going to expand the playoffs. Pretty soon, you want to talk about insignificant. Imagine if we go to an 8, 10, 12 team playoff and you don't make that. Your bowl game is, I mean, a major exhibition at that point. Because what these non-CFP playoff bowl games are, the Rose Bowl, for instance, right? You're going to watch Capital One bowls. What they are is they're vacation spring games, right? They're a chance to send the seniors off the right way, the ones that do play, right? To give them their last moment as a Buckeye or as whatever team they play for. Give them their last hurrah, right? That's one thing that they do. Another thing they do is they give an opportunity, right, for those fringe NFL players to get more tape, make more money, right? And this is not, it is a playoff game, but you look at a guy like Kobe Bryant at Cincinnati, won the Thorpe Award, playing for Cincinnati. I know it's a playoff game, but let's pretend it wasn't. And they were going up against Alabama in a consolation bowl. That would be a huge opportunity for him to go cover Alabama receivers and show NFL scouts that he can do it against top competition, right? So it's a huge opportunity. These games are another opportunity for fringe NFL players to get more tape. And the other thing it is going to do, which you're going to see in the Ohio State game, it's going to preview 2022 players on a big stage, give them a ton of experience. You think about this receiver room that Brian Hartline's leading without now Chris Olave and Garrett Wilson. What an opportunity for him to develop, coach a hungry group that's excited to play in the Rose Bowl. You don't think Julian Fleming is over the moon ecstatic about this Rose Bowl? He's going to have a feature role, right? Jaxon Smith-Njigba is no longer wide receiver three. He's wide receiver one. And he's going to get the opportunity to show he can dominate like he has all year without the attention being on the two guys outside. There's so much to be seen and love about the Rose Bowl, and it is not the culmination of the 2021 Buckeyes. This is the beginning of the 2022 Buckeyes. This is a chance to see young guys grow, get experience, and then have a whole offseason to digest that huge stage that they were just thrust into in a major role. Emeka Egbuka, a star could be born on Saturday. That's what these games are. You have to reset your mind. Take a different approach to it in your mindset. This game is still awesome, the Rose Bowl. These non-CFP bowls are still awesome. You just have to reframe why they're awesome. And that's my challenge to the fans across the country is accept these bowl games for what they are. And that is awesome exhibitions of football, entertainment, right? It is fun to watch these young kids get these opportunities. So I'm excited for the Rose Bowl. I know that most Buckeye fans are disappointed. And Ohio State didn't even sell all of their allotment. That's not because the Rose Bowl doesn't matter, just so we're clear. That's because it's wildly expensive to go out there. People are afraid that their flights will get canceled and everything will get shot. They get out there and the bowl game might get canceled because of these bullshit COVID restrictions. And on top of that, it's in fucking California, where Governor Newsom, the emperor, has made it so miserable to exist that people don't want to pay for that. They would rather stay at home and watch it on TV, go to a local sports bar. Why spend that money for that, all that unknown, all that uncertainty to what? To watch an exhibition, right? That's what it is. I promise you, if COVID was not being treated the way it is, that bitch would be sold out with Buckeyes. You saw it in 2015. You saw it in the Cotton Bowl. You saw it the last time Ohio State went to the Rose Bowl. This is not an issue of a lack of importance in the game. This is an issue of just the circumstance of the world we live in today. And that's what it is. So call a spade a spade. Call it what it is. That is what it is. But I want to talk about this Rose Bowl game because I think it's going to be fun to watch and it's going to be a good matchup. Obviously, this is Utah's Super Bowl. You talk about shot in the ass. Joined the Pac-12 after the 2010 season, and they are in the Rose Bowl, right? The granddaddy of them all, Pasadena, California, roses in your mouth, right there on Southern California, the beautiful sunshine. Utah has officially elevated its game from the, you know, Mountain West Conference team it was. Just think, back in 2004, Urban Meyer broke the BCS when he took an undefeated team into the Fiesta Bowl and beat Pitt. I think it was Pitt. Either way, that it was how far they've come. They were Cincinnati back in the day, right? And now they're in the Rose Bowl, legitimately building a program that could be in a playoff eventually. Think about that. Utah, a Mountain West team, a mere, 11 years ago? Meteoric rise for that program. So this is their Super Bowl. And I honestly think that the opt-outs for Ohio State have created a little unknown, for sure, but they've also increased the importance of the players playing. Like those four kids that opted out, their career was magnificent. They had great careers. This game would not have, it would have shadowed in comparison to some of the games that they played in, national championships, playoff games, rivalry games. It would not have been as important to them. This game is going to be wildly important to Tylenol Williams, right? He's going to play more than four snaps this week in this game because Haskell Garrett's out. Never mind the fact he should have against Michigan. That's beside the point. When you look at this Utah team, they're a really impressive group, man. The Utah offense, This offense at Utah, if you just look at stats, which I obviously I've told you and preached before, I can't stand. I look at stats to tell a story, and I look deep at the stats to tell the story accurately. This Utah, the team as a whole, has dramatically improved down the stretch. From a team that lost three games early compared to the second half of the year Utah Utes team, it's a totally different team. Similar to Ohio State, you could say, other than that upset of one of the best teams in the country in the Michigan Wolverines. I mean, you look at this Utah offense, the number one rushing offense in the Pac-12, number two in the NCAA, 5.6 yards per carry. They've scored 35 rushing touchdowns. And when you watch the film on the run game, they're dominant up front. They dominated Oregon at the line of scrimmage in both games they played. Ton of zone run game. They run counter, multiple run game. Third and fourth down, you can expect the quarterback run game. A lot of two tight end sets. They're a huge two tight end offense. I mean, two of their top three receivers are their tight ends. They run a bunch of read options. Their quarterback Rising is a really, really good runner, good athlete. So this run game is going to be problematic and nervousome if you're a Buckeye fan, especially watching Ohio State's defense try to defend the run game for Michigan. One of the best run games Ohio State's going to play. They have a decently efficient throw game, 62% completion percentage, 7.3 yards per attempt. They've thrown 21 touchdowns to 8 interceptions. All in all, they average 6.4 yards a play, which is a top 30 offense nationally. So their offense is decent. Their run game's really good. Their pass game's average. Pass pro has been exceptional. They've allowed less than one sack per game. A lot of that is style of offense, but also they're good in pass pro. Ohio State has created sacks, but not pressured the quarterback at a high clip. They've only allowed 12 sacks on the year, sixth in America. They also have the most passing attempts out of any of the top six teams in sacks. So they throw it more than the other teams that are leading the country in sacks allowed. They're almost 50% on third down, but if you look at it, since week six, when they really turned the corner, they're almost 60% on third down, including 63% versus Oregon in two games. So the third down offense has gotten very, very good. They're good for one turnover a game, only 14 on the year, but they lost 8 turnovers in their first 4 games. Similar story, right? 6 turnovers in their last 8 games. So they've gotten far better at ball security than they were to begin the year. They also have been outstanding scoring in the red zone, 71% touchdowns. So that's a key stat. And Rising is a good quarterback in there. One, because of quarterback run, and he is very in tune with their red zone offense. Their run game is really good. I already mentioned their quarterback runs that they do that are very dominant. Ohio State has struggled with those, so that is worrisome. They have TJ Pledger. We talked about him in the Pac-12 preview, the Oklahoma transfer. They also had Tavion Thomas, the Dayton, Ohio kid, who Ohio State recruited. Tony Alford recruited him, but they wanted him to go to a JUCO, and he didn't want to, so he's at Utah. They've been a solid 1-2 punch all year. They have very below average in the skill in the pass game. This secondary at Ohio State should have zero problems with the receivers. Now, their tight end heavy emphasis in the throw game, and like I mentioned, a lot of two tight ends, number 80, Brant Keith, and number 86, Dalton Kincaid, are 1-3 when it comes to targets on the team. When you watch their pass game, a lot of quick game, a lot of crossers, very minimal shots. I mean, third and long, they might throw four verticals. They ran a flea flicker against Oregon and launched it down the field and didn't hit it. You know, trick play here or there, but they're a very efficient, short, quick game, crossers, that kind of stuff offense. That's what they are. When you look at Cameron Rising, he's a below average arm talent, but he's efficient. He's not a bad player. The key, like a lot of average quarterbacks, is when he's kept clean, he completes 71% of his balls, 16 touchdowns to 2 interceptions. When he's pressured, 34% completion percentage, only 2 touchdowns and 3 picks. So that's the key. And they do a good job. It's a lot of quick game, a lot of crossers, and they pass pro decent. I mean, they really do. So I think Ohio State's to sit back and play a soft-ass zone coverage, you're going to get picked apart with the quick game. If they want to go man coverage, they have the guys, but good God. Please coach this secondary up on how to manage bunches, tight splits, crossers, because if they don't, they'll be brutal. I mean, it'll be brutal to watch. Rising is not great on deep balls, 33%, only 50% over 10 yards. He's an average player. This Utah offense relies on the run game heavy. And then those quick high percentage throws. And honestly, that's what's killed this defense for Ohio State all year. The linebackers misfitting run fits, right? Avoiding blocks or just flat getting blocked like Velcro. And this Utah front, they block really well. You watch the Oregon games, they rolled Oregon off the ball, something Ohio State didn't even really do. So I think it's a really tough matchup for this defense in Ohio State, and I think that Utah's going to be able to do some things offensively. And honestly, we'll get a picture of what this Ohio State team did the last, 29 days. When you look at Utah's defense, honestly, they're just salty. Number one defense in the Pac-12, only allow 4.9 yards per play. They will make Ohio State's fourth top 20 defense they have played. Ohio State's offense has went against number 7 Penn State, number 8 Michigan, number 14 Utah, and number 18 Minnesota. That being said, they've moved the ball on pretty much all of them. So I know they're missing two big players and a huge offensive lineman. That is a big loss. But I think they'll be able to move the ball. I mean, you look at Utah, around 10 missed tackles per game, which is high for a top-flight defense. I mean, the 14th ranked defense in the country and missing double-digit missed tackles, that's crazy to me, honestly. They have 259 quarterback pressures. They do a great job getting after the quarterback. Comparatively, Ohio State has 229. So they have 30 more QB pressures on the year than Ohio State does. And they lead the Pac-12 in sacks. They have 42 sacks. Their Pac-12 sack leader, number 42, keep an eye on him. Micah Tafua has 9.5 sacks, 74 total QB pressures. 74. For comparison, Tyreek Smith leads Ohio State with 32. And Micah Tafua has 74 total QB pressures. Number 42, keep an eye on him. 6'3", 250-pound, Hawaii native. When I watch the film on him, here's the breakdown. He's an average speed rusher. He does have a lethal spin move counter inside, but most of his rushes are inside rushes and twists. Utah twists the shit out of people. So the offensive line needs to be ready to pick up those twists. And honestly, here's the key to the game. CJ Stroud, who has been extremely below average at navigating the pocket. Versus a straight rush, you can get away with that, right? Guys just rush straight and you kind of find a seam. Versus twists, he has to be able to have a feel in the pocket with his eyes downfield and move and slide in the pocket to make the O-line right. Twists are really hard. The O-line has to stay on levels to pass twists off, and CJ has to help them. So when there is a sack, there will be a sack. I promise they will give up at least one sack. When there is, I want you to watch. How is the offensive line in passing it off? And did CJ Stroud slide and maneuver the pocket to help the O-line? Because that's what he did in the Michigan game that killed the O-line. You can blame the O-line all you want. They didn't play well in that game, but he does not have a feel in the pocket to help him. He really doesn't. That's the biggest thing I need to see in this game. They also have the number one rush defense in the Pac-12. They only allow 3.6 yards per carry, only 11 touchdowns on the entire year. Oregon, who was a solid rushing offense, averaged 2.5 yards per carry and only had one touchdown in both matchups. So one total, not one per game. They only scored a rushing touchdown once in two games. They had the number two pass defense in the Pac-12, 6.2 yards per attempt. But the reality is their secondary is very, very much their weakness. Their secondary is a weakness. Their biggest weaknesses are number 8, Clark Phillips III, the corner, allows a 63% completion percentage, 562 yards, only one touchdown, but he's given up a ton of plays. Then their safety, number 28, Brandon McKinney, allows 74% completion percentage, 4 touchdowns. He also leads the team in missed tackles with 18. 25% of the time, Brandon McKinney has to tackle a guy, he misses the tackle. That's awful. Now, they don't ask their secondary to do a lot. Very, very minimal man coverage against quality opponents. When they play some shit team, they'll play more man. But against Ohio State, you're not going to see a lot of man coverage. Hey, well, you might with the kind of the inexperience at receiver, but they would have to have a bracket or something for Jackson Smith and Jigba because they haven't played a player like him yet. A ton of zone coverage, minimal man versus quality opponents. Like I said, they run a base cover two a ton on third and medium, third and long. Jackson Smith and Jigba should have a field day on these slot mismatches with good zone beaters. They will play one high zone on third down and first down. They disguise it really well. But I think this is quite an opportunity. If this offensive line can pick up the twists, because that's what they rely on. They blitz some, but most of it is twist game and blitz with twist game. If the O-line can pick it up and CJ can help the O-line maneuvering the pocket, they got a chance to gash this zone defense. And God help them if they go man. I mean, I know Ohio State's inexperienced at the perimeter, but I think that they will really have a field day. The other guy to watch that I think is critical here is Jeremy Ruckert. He's kind of been a non-factor all year, although I think he's been outstanding. As a coach, especially leading into a bowl game or leading into spring or leading into training camp, you always go through your roster and say, all right, let's rank our playmakers. 1 through 10, let's say. Because that is what your offense should be focused around, right? Right now, you would say Travion Henderson is number one on that list. Jaxon Smith-Njigba is number two. In my opinion, Jeremy Ruckert is number three, right? He was number five when you put Olave and Garrett Wilson above him. So that's why he didn't get a lot of touches. Ohio State wasn't wrong for doing that. He just didn't have a chance to get featured. Now he's in the top three. If we're going to force feed Julian Fleming because some system of offense, that's dumb. Use your best players and feature them. That is an offensive coach's job. No different than a defensive coach's job is to find the personnel groups that give you the most dynamic 11 on the field and create a defense to feature their skill set. That's your job as a coach. So I think this Ohio State staff has to get their priorities in line. Travion Henderson is number one. This kid should have over 200 yards rushing. They should throw it to him out of the backfield. Jaxon Smith-Njigba should have over 100 yards receiving. And that third guy should be Jeremy Ruckert. And I think it will be. And then you let those young guys get some experience, not as much pressure. You're not relying on Emeka Egbuka or Marvin Harrison Jr. to win a bunch of one-on-ones to win the game. You don't know if they're those guys yet. And you know what? Take a shot to them once in a while, right? Give them a chance. See that you never know. We used to talk about all the time, small victories as a coach. You got to give a kid an opportunity. Try to set him up for success. And if they hit that opportunity, that's where careers take off. You get Emeka Egbuka in a matchup on, let's say, Clark Phillips, the corner I told you is the weak corner, and you're up by 10 points. Take the shot, man. He might make a ridiculous play. And kind of like Chris Olave is a freshman, right? The game's going well. You take a shot to him. First, you hit him on a drag route. He goes and scores. He blocks a punt. Then the next time, you just throw it up to him. He makes a ridiculous catch. Careers are made. Legends are born in situations like that. You look at Garrett Wilson as a freshman against Clemson. Throw it up to him. The kid climbs the ladder and makes a catch 11 feet in the air. Careers are made and legends are born. That's what this is for Ohio State, those young kids. But I think you can rely on a veteran dude that will be an NFL football player in Jeremy Ruckert to really solidify that third option for CJ Stroud and Ryan Day to feature. I do. When you look at the key to the game, obviously number one, Ohio State, the defense. Can they stop the run? They haven't against a good rushing team yet. This is a really, really good rushing team, probably the second best rushing team they have faced. Can they stop the run? QB run has killed Ohio State's defense in the past, and Utah is really good at it. My biggest question mark, the secondary will have no issue with this pass game. None. I mean, they might play soft at times and give up little dinks. There's no way that Denzel Burke and Cameron Brown in the secondary should have an issue containing kind of this elementary pass game, honestly. The biggest question mark on defense I have is the job audition that Al Washington has with the linebackers development. They are thin on numbers, some young talent. He's had 29 days to get these kids to play the proper gaps, defeat blocks, play downhill, get aggressive, and hit a motherfucker. 29, he's really had 2 years, but 29 days to fix that shit and audition and campaign to keep his job, right? That's what we're looking at here. Can the linebackers do that? Will Al Washington get the job done? That's what I want to know. I don't see a problem anywhere else. I want to see Tylenol Williams play more, for sure. I would love to see Tyreek Smith and Zach Harrison get some pressure on the quarterback. But the reality is, Utah doesn't throw the ball with a lot of deep drop back. It's going to be tough to pressure the quarterback. So they have to play their zone coverages with great understanding. They have to get pressure when it's time to. And then they have to thrive at the linebacker position. That's what it is. In the run game, and in the pass game, getting their proper zone drops, being aggressive with the ball. You watch the Oregon game. Oregon had, I think, two picks on just zone coverage. They jumped the route because they had great identification and they triggered when his front end came off the ball. That's what I need to see out of Ohio State. It's got to happen. And then they can Ohio State create turnovers? Oregon even created turnovers against Utah and they got blown out. Will Ohio State be able to get the ball to the offense? Will they be able to play underneath zone coverage and jump a quick route, right? Will they be able to pass off crossers and man coverage and jump a crosser and pick it off? Will the D-line, you know, disrupt the football and create an errant throw, which also happened in that game? So that's what I'm looking for out of the defense. I think it's a great matchup, great chance to see some young guys that will be back next year. I'm trying to think of who all is. There's only a couple players that are even going to be gone on this defense. I would imagine Zach Harrison comes back unless he just, I don't know, has some ridiculous game in a game that I don't think he's going to have many opportunities. So it's going to be awesome to see. Tyreek Smith obviously is one Going to be interesting to see how the defense does. And I think it's going to be even more interesting to kind of see what happens next, right? We're going to have a lot of turnover, a lot of things happening on defense. You look at the offense, it's really simple. The O-line has to manage the twist games, right? They can't let that defensive end penetrate inside and then on a twist, come off of him and let him get to C.J. Stroud and disrupt it. They have to manage the twist games, both the offensive line, tight ends and running backs on chips, and then C.J. Stroud has to navigate the pocket. He has to. The biggest thing I'm interested to see, and I think they will, how much two tight end sets will Ohio State get into? Because with the inexperience at receiver, you take a lot of pressure off of them. You put in, you know, let's say it's Jeremy Ruckert and Cade Stover, or even G. Scott might have an increased role as a kind of a mature-ass dude that switched positions, an athletic H-back type of guy. I think that'll be a great game plan that Ryan Day probably will employ to keep the pressure off those receivers. You can roll out Jaxon Smith-Njigba, Julian Fleming, feel good about them. They have experience. And then two tight ends. Dynamic run game. Great point of attack for Travion Henderson and Mayan Williams. And now you can utilize three extremely athletic tight ends in G. Scott Jr., Cade Stover, and Jeremy Ruckert. I think it's a great plan to play more tight ends in this game. When they do go 11 personnel, Jaxon Smith-Njigba in the slot in versus zone coverage should be an absolute feast. He should just absolutely eat all day long. C.J. Stroud should be able to have a big bounce back career day. That's what should happen. This rush defense will test the simple schemed run game and be really tough to move, especially because Ohio State's almost all lateral runs. I am interested to see another guard in the game with Nick Petit-Frere out, probably bumping Thayer back out to left tackle. Keep Paris Johnson in at right guard. And I've had several people ask me, why wouldn't they move Paris Johnson out to left tackle if that's his position for next year? That'd be completely unfair to the kid, right? Not only is he a first-year starter playing guard, he's practiced all year, all spring. He's been a guard at all times. And I know he has a skill set to be a tackle. He's going to be a great tackle when the time comes. But to switch him there in 20-some days and expect him to go play left tackle or switch DeJuan to left and him at right, it just would be unfair to the kid. And I've seen tackles, talking about Isaiah Prince at Penn State, that have a bad game and they play as a head case in their head the rest of their career. I've seen it happen. That would not be fair to that kid. So hopefully what I've heard they're going to do and what I assume they'll do is keep him at right guard, bump Thayer out to left tackle, let one of their guards go in Matt Jones or whoever they decide is their kind of sixth guy. And let's play the game with a true guard in the game. So I'm excited to see that because the lateral run game is tough to move people and this front is tough. And the other question is this, will Ryan Day add some run game wrinkles with this extra time to prep for this game? I know he knows that was part of the problem for Ohio State this season. And not that they have the number one offense in the country. So when I say problem, it's a very minute problem. But still, not having a dynamic run game and not being able to run the ball consistently, you know, every now and then they struggled because of the horizontal aspect of the run game. And I think they need more multiplicity. So I'm excited to see, do they run some guard pulls, right? I know Paris Johnson can do it. You add in a true guard. Do we run some counters, some powers, some man sweeps, some man schemes, some downhill split zone as opposed to all the horizontal stretch game? That's important, I think. So I'm excited to see that. I'm excited to see their prep. And then this is a preview of the 2022 Buckeyes, a team that I think is poised to have a chance to be one of those top four teams. I honestly didn't think they were this year. I know I got low on them, high on them, low on them, but I've always said this would be a growth year. I mean, the youngest Ohio State roster in like the last 20 years, as far as players in the two deep. This was going to be a growing pain year. Granted, they could have beat Oregon. I know. If the defensive staff was better, they could have beat Oregon. If the defense was tougher, they could have beat Michigan. Okay, yeah. If could have, would have, should have, blah, blah, blah. They didn't. So I think there's a preview for the 2020 team, and I think it's going to be huge at the momentum of the offseason and some of these players, what their drive is like into next season. I think it's huge. In the game, as far as result, I think Ohio State wins and covers. I don't think they blow out Utah. I think they win. I think they cover the spread. And I think that, you know, Ohio State hasn't lost two games back-to-back since I was there in 2013 when we lost to Michigan State in the Big Ten Championship game, lost to Clemson in the Orange Bowl. So it's been, what is that, 2013? 8 years since Ohio State has lost back-to-back games. I don't see that changing. I know the motivation issues. I know the opt-outs. This team is talented, and those opt-outs have created another level of hunger for this team. So that's how I see the Rose Bowl going. It is always the pageantry, the scenery, the mountains, the palm trees, the Rose Bowl Stadium in Pasadena. It's always so beautiful. So I'm excited to watch it. I know you guys are too. We will have a bunch of stuff going on leading up to it. Obviously, Thursday, we will preview the college football playoff semifinal games. Morning show every morning. Come hang out with Chris, Drew, and I, where we talk basically current events and just casually talk college football. But thank you for tuning in. Thank you for listening. As always, I appreciate you. Hope you enjoyed the show. Getting back to content. Getting back to real shows, analysis, you know, film review. Hope you enjoyed it. And as we say, if you didn't, go fuck yourself, San Diego.
What a hit, Denzel Ward. You got barbecue back there, and you didn't invite me. Hurt my feelings.
You'll be pleased to know this is the last time I'm hosting. I don't care anymore. I'm joking. I never did.
Braxton Miller, loose spin move. Miller heading for the end zone.
You're in no position to lecture the public about anything. You know nothing about the real world.
He'll run it after the 10, 15, 20, 25, 30, 35, 40, 45, 50, 45. There goes Davis.
Oh, my God.
Davis is going to run it all the way back. Auburn's going to win the football game.
Lucky for me, the press can barely speak English.
But they are who we thought they were.
Whoa, he has trouble with the snap. And the ball is free. It's picked up by Michigan State's Jalen Watts Jackson. And he scores on the last play of the game. Unbelievable.
Well, then get the fuck out of here then. Okay, see ya.